And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right, saving the world. One sound bite at a time. Well, apparently our audience took hold of the governor's number. I'm going to repeat it for you right now because Denison from Athens is saying, what's that number? I could not catch it. Here, I will say it slow. You ready? 334-242-7100. That's the governor's office, 334-242-7100. You know what I love is when we find out that not only do all our regular listeners are in the hopper and listening to us right now, but we got other state legislators that are also listening in. And so, yeah, I just had another state senator just text me during the interview we just had there with State Senator Chris Elliott. And said, just want you to know, a number of us, that's other senators, are 100% behind Chris. The fight may be over who gets to co-sponsor it first. I said, get her done. He said, I'm trying to get people to call the gov. I'm ready to defund. So glad of it. And we appreciate y'all moving in that direction. Roughly Ann from Huntsville on the text line says, done. Governor Ivey has been called. Big green check mark right next to her done. She's already called. Badger from Athens says, happy hump day. Yeah, Badger, same to you. Lonnie from Huntsville says, what impact have heterosexual or celibate people made? Where's their display? Where's the cis white male display?
Where is it? I'm just going to make a t-shirt. Cis white male.
Cis white male.
Watch out. Cis white male.
Just call me what I am. Apparently I'm a cis white male. David from Huntsville says, bravo, Chris Elliott. The archives doesn't deserve the extra money. Kimball from Harvest says the power of the purse can be a powerful tool to enforce checks and balances on the archives or any other organization or bureaucracy, both state and federal. If only these legislatures have the will to use it, we'll see. That's Kimball from Harvest. JT from Lacey Springs has got a message for you, Boomer. I'll let you take a look at that. TC from Priceville. Would you send me TC? Can I even say it? Oh, it's okay. He's got a picture of a guy sitting on the porch decked out in combat gear saying, so you were just born this way, attracted to kids? That's wild. But anyways, keep digging. Meaning somebody's having to dig their own hole. Wow. Jerry from Decatur, Deuteronomy 22:5, King James Version, pertaining to men wearing women's clothes and vice versa. God says it's an abomination. Once male, always male. Once female, always female. And we'll face God as such. Point taken. Gina from Athens, they're after our kids. Tell him, I'm not sure what you're telling me, Gina, but okay, I think you got the point. And then Roughly Ann from Huntsville says she's got the governor saved in her contacts now. Sweet. All right, hey, listen, it's time to switch gears here in just a minute. We're going to come back from this break and jump right into the next section we call Home Fries. And I got several stories, not the least of which is the one that we just talked about, so I'll kind of cap off that discussion with a piece about that. So you heard me talking with State Senator Elliott about the fact that the three-judge panel from the 11th Circuit has come back now and said, hey, Alabama, that ruling you just got, you got to start redrawing maps, and you got to have your maps completed by July 21st. Here's their schedule. They got to have a status report to the court July 7th, July 14th. I mean, it's coming up fast, y'all. By the way, it's no small thing to draw these maps. I mean, it's legit. Status reports due on July 7th and 14th. Alabama legislature's maps must be completed as proposed July 21st. Plaintiff's objections, in other words, the case is still ongoing, must be filed by July 28th. A hearing will be held on August 14th if necessary. In other words, this ain't over. Redraw the maps, and I'm sure the fight will still continue. This is going to be a heck of a thing, y'all. By the way, we have 7 congressional districts, and I will just tell you, there's going to be a tussle going on. Ain't nobody wants to lose a part of what they got. Ain't nobody wants to pick up more than what they needed before, don't want the pieces they don't want. And it's sometimes it gets down to the point that you're literally having to divide neighborhoods. You're having to halfway down the street switch to another congressional district. And you get down to where you're counting households. And it's not easy. And I've been through this redistricting special session thing several times, and it just, bottom line is, it ain't easy. And they got their work cut out for them, and it's going to change the political landscape of Alabama potentially. Because, like, for instance, you know, I told before, Boomer and I live in a county we're sitting here at the almost at the dividing line between three congressional districts. Now, they redraw a little bit, we could be in an entirely different area, dealing with a different congressman. The same is going to be true, though, for down south. What happens with our two freshmen, Jerry Carl and Barry Moore? Are they going to get drawn together? Some think they might. And is there going to be a fight for seniority to be maintained? Look, it's supposed to be by population, and apparently now it has to include race. Wow. More on that. Home fries in just a minute. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful, beautiful, beautiful state in the nation, Alabama. I'm talking about this city. I mean, this show sends its signal way on down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, way on back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Hey, this is that section where we gather up news from around the state, and we call it Home fries. Thank you, Boomer, for sizzling up some home fries for us. So, yeah, we're going to talk about things that are going on in and around your state right now. And by the way, one of them is a story that broke a few weeks back, about 4 weeks ago. But it's got a story on AL.com as of yesterday that takes it a step further. So it's amazing when you see people abuse the opportunity to serve in public office, and not even making the mistake on something or filing their paperwork weird or whatever. No, actually working to get money for themselves, taking advantage of things that were designed to benefit their community. There's a program that happens in a number of districts. It was actually in my district when I was in the state senate. But I purposefully had a designated representative handle everything for me. And this is a situation we got in Jefferson County where dollars are put into funds that legislators can then use to fund things in their districts. You know, it's getting money to the Little League team. It's, you know, the Boy Scouts are going to their jamboree and you want to give some money for that. You got the ability to, you know, help the booster club send the band to play at, you know, Madison Square Garden. All things happen all the time. You need new uniforms for the little football team that doesn't have them, and so you find a way to give them these grant checks, and it's very cool. Unless you're finding a way to get those grant checks routed back into your pocket, that's what happened in Birmingham. Says the scheme was complicated, with piles of tax money flowing from Jefferson County to a youth baseball league, then to a dance team, which prosecutors say never performed, and finally into personal bank accounts, credit cards, and mortgage payments. So State Representative Fred Plump, a Democrat from Birmingham, last month resigned his seat in the state legislature and pleaded guilty. So don't think this is an allegation and I'm talking about it. He pleaded guilty already. Pleaded guilty to federal charges of conspiracy and obstruction of justice, and he's scheduled to appear in federal court in Birmingham later this month. The plea agreement, which he signed, references two other figures involved in the kickback scheme. One's referred to as legislator number one. The other one's referred to as individual number one. The other legislator has already openly admitted who he is. It's Representative John Rogers from Birmingham, who's been in the House for, Lord, 30 years. Representative John Rogers identified himself to AL.com as legislator number one, denies he did anything wrong, says, I don't know what they did with the money. I didn't do it. That's their business. I had nothing to do with it. Okay, well, you're still named. The third figure is a legislative aide to Rogers. Rogers identified her as his private employed assistant. Vary Johnson is her name. So Vary Johnson allegedly received the benefit of dollars that were designed for a little league team. And we're talking about not a little bit. Like over the course of several years, old Fred Plump wrote checks totaling $196,000, according to his plea agreement. $196,000 that went into things like, oh, and not the Piper Davis Baseball League. No, no. Went to things like paying off a mortgage and, you know, making sure that someone had some trip money and, you know, who knows what else. But they would recommend the money go. They would send the money to. They would get the kickback on the backside. And they would all be happy together until the feds found out. So that is happening right now. And that is still developing. And I can't help but think that Representative John Rogers, who, by the way, comes across extremely cocky. And if you ever met John Rogers, you will know he is one interesting bird, man. You can't understand a word he says sometimes. He'll get going, and you're thinking, I don't know what he's saying to me right now. But he's been in the state house forever. He's 82 years old, and he has this air of, I know how it works. Don't try and tell me. Well, that's the way he feels about this. I know how this works. Don't try and tell me. I didn't do nothing wrong. It was them. If they did something wrong, that's on them. Well, he's named as legislator number one, and we're talking about $196,000. So we'll see where it goes. Cooking up some home fries. Oh, we're sizzling again. Thank you, Boomer. Quick on the button. Here's another one for you, Yellowhammer News. So Javelin missiles. We talked about this before. A lot of folks don't realize that the majority of the Javelin missiles that the U.S. Army inventory, the U.S. military's inventory contains and, you know, are being sent over to destroy Russian tanks in Ukraine right now, are made in Troy, Alabama. So I've seen pictures of shipments of Javelin missiles being sent to Ukraine and branded on the side, manufactured in Troy, Alabama. Well, Aerojet Rocketdyne, congratulations to them up in Huntsville. They just were awarded a two-year, $23 million contract by Lockheed Martin to build the motors for the Javelin missile, which is going to be also continued to be built in larger numbers down in Troy. So, yeah, congratulations to the owners and employees of Aerojet Rocketdyne in Huntsville. This is a, you know, man-portable, multi-purpose weapon system. Beats a broad spectrum of threats, and so it's been making its name on the battlefield, and it's built and tested right here in Alabama. Speaking of military stuff, though, our Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth has recently touted the fact that he chairs what's called the Alabama Military Stability Commission. It's basically the committee, if you will, that assesses how best we are caring for our military community, what we can do to prevent another round of BRAC ever shutting something down, how do we deal with issues related to, expanding the footprint of the military, taking care of our veterans, how do we do things to provide benefits. Anyway, all that to say, Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth has an article out in Yellowhammer News today. He points out the Alabama Military Stability Commission aims to protect and expand federal military bases and DOD infrastructure, and they just passed a number of pieces of legislation that wound up being pretty key. I won't cover all of them. You have one, House Bill 44, expands the composition of the commission to include reps from what is now Fort Moore, formerly Fort Benning, because they have a portion, believe it or not, a lot of folks don't realize Fort Benning laps over into Alabama. In fact, I'm almost positive when I went through airborne school, I want to say the drop zone was across the line in Alabama because we had to fly over the river, and that was one of the jump masters. And when I was in the jump master training down there, that was one of the jump master's signs was the river border. But, yeah, either we went over and flew back in a racetrack, or we may have actually jumped into Alabama. Either way, part of Fort Benning comes into Alabama. They have another bill, Senate Bill 17, that includes the Space Force now and everything that's included for military referencing. We have Senator Sam Gavan of Huntsville. He had Senate Bill 37. It extends professional license reciprocity to DOD contractors. In other words, if you're moving here to work with, say, Lockheed or Aerojet Rocketdyne or one of the others that does DOD work, and your wife has a license or your spouse has a license to do some trade, we're going to say your license once you get here and you can go back to work. You don't have to worry about getting retested. And that license reciprocity is a big deal. Senate Bill 46 by Arthur Orr in Decatur established what's known as the Interstate Teacher Mobility Compact, basically meaning, hey, if you're a teacher and you move here because of a military reassignment, you can teach in Alabama. We don't have to send you back through school and get you specially certified. So all this stuff has been done. That and about four or five other bills, the Lieutenant Governor's Military Stability Commission began putting all these together. And I find that to be very cool and worth their time. One thing that I didn't think was worth their time, there's a good leadoff. One thing I didn't think was worth their time, Alabama Daily News reports that the governor did sign the bill to give loans to distressed colleges. Remember that thing was going on with Birmingham Southern? Birmingham Southern hosed themselves by their own admission. They got their accounting screwed up. And they also got way ahead of themselves on their building programs and did more than they ever should. And we now have a plan in place to allow them to get a loan with taxpayer dollars. Woo! Now, one thing I did not see until today is the first time I've ever seen this said. Alabama Daily News reports that in order to qualify, colleges must be experiencing a financial hardship that could lead to its closure. So we're not going to see, you know, Jacksonville State rebuilding its stadium. It's going to have to be something that could cause the college to shut down if it can't get a loan. All right. And they have to pledge their assets as collateral. All right. At least that's helpful. But, yeah, we'll see where it goes. But right now, if you remember, the most that could be borrowed at any given time is a total of $30 million cumulatively. At one point, I think that Birmingham Southern was asking for $37 million by themselves. We'll see how this plays out. Tell you what, Boom, go ahead and take the break right now. We'll do that, and we'll come right back. Have a discussion about ESG and the banks in Alabama. We just passed a law against that. Yeah, tell the banks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, making common sense of superpower. And by the way, I got to tell you, there's a story that was breaking just a little while ago while we were in the middle of another segment. Just to quickly update you on the news is that they are hearing sounds on that search for that lost mini sub that was taking tourists of all things, really, down to the Titanic. It is still not been found, but they are saying that they are actually finding or hearing noises underwater, and they're hopeful that means that they are you know, going to be discovering them. I think they have like less than 20 hours of air left by estimations. So God bless them. Hey, last piece of home fries. Get that sizzle right there. Thank y'all. Thank y'all so much. Thank you. Cook it up. Last bit of home fries. So you hear me talk about ESG a lot, right? ESG, environmental, social, and governance. What is that? Well, it's basically the woke scorecard. It is groups like BlackRock and Vanguard and the World Economic Forum, and this is not conspiracy theory. This is real. You can go look it up. They talk about it openly. They call it the Great Reset. They're looking at how do we force the liberal agenda out there when we're not elected officials. Oh, I know what. Let's hit them where they live. And so corporations are now setting public policy. That is not the way it's supposed to be. That is absolutely antithetical to the way it's supposed to be. If you're a bank, you do banking. If you're a manufacturer, you make widgets. If you're a service-related company, you provide the best service you can. And if you don't like something out there, then consider whether or not it is in your charter to go out and try to make a difference on something. By the way, this is not to say, hey, would you please sponsor that event we got coming? Sure, why not? But ESG pushes way past that. ESG is the kind of thing that creates the Bud Light Dylan Mulvaney situation where they got way outside the bounds of their charter. ESG is what makes some companies decide they have to tout the green agenda, even though they don't have anything to do with the green agenda. ESG is what makes Disney try to fight back against legislation, of all things, that prevents the sexualization of children. ESG is what makes, you know, companies give millions and millions of dollars to Black Lives Matter, even as they burn down the cities in our country during the riots in 2020. So this scorecard has gotten pretty legit. Well, I got an article here from 1819 News, came out today. Headline on it, where do the three top Birmingham-based banks stand on ESG? All right, so we just passed a law. Keep this in mind. We just passed a law, and Governor Ivey just signed it, saying that we will have restrictions on the financial institution's ability to use ESG factors to discriminate in their business-making decisions. In other words, if you're a company, by the way, I just talked to one. I can't name the company, but I just talked to one that's in the firearms industry. I'll leave it at that. And they are relocating to the Southeast. And lo and behold, banking has apparently become a problem. Why? Because one of the things that's being targeted, besides things like the oil and gas industry, are anything to do with Second Amendment. Anything to do with firearms, you can't loan them money. We're going to check your portfolios. If you've loaned them money, you might drop your score. So banks are cutting back on who they'll loan to include things that we all believe in that are protected by our Constitution. So that being said, Alabama passed a state law most recently, just this session, and it prevents this from happening. However, we have some major banks right here in the state, that are headquartered in the state. How do they stand? Well, of course, the first one you got to name is Regions. Regions Bank, very, very pro-ESG. Not just like, well, we heard. No, they say. Regions lobbyist, senior vice president and head of state government affairs, was a key player in lobbying against the anti-ESG legislation. I know the guy, Jason Isbell. He's a good dude, but he's lobbying for a thing that we don't believe in. Regions gets out there, and they historically have been defending ESG legislation, or agendas, I'm sorry. Their own website, you can go to it, it reads, Regions is committed to our mission to make life better and create shared value. For this reason, we believe more than ever that we must consider how ESG matters affect our company and be transparent about our ESG practices and performance. In our ESG reporting, we illustrate how we are working to advance our ESG efforts to make life better for our customers. In their 2022 proxy statement, the chair of the bank's board of directors touted their ESG report as being a big deal. The company enhanced transparency around ESG issues by publishing an expanded ESG report structured around the World Economic Forum's stakeholder capitalism pillars. In other words, they went all in with Klaus Schwab and BlackRock and the World Economic Forum. Regions is headquartered in Birmingham, Alabama, where we just passed a law against this. But everything about their corporate decision-making right now is geared towards it. So what's that going to do if, say, a firearms company or an offshore oil and gas drilling company or somebody who's in petroleum exporting, if somebody wants to do something in the state of Alabama like we've always done, is Regions going to loan them money? Well, they better under our state law. The other one is Service First Bank. Don't have as much to say about them, but Service First Bank is considered pro-ESG. Service First Bank and BankShares, Inc. Believes that as a company operating in the financial services industry, we have a significant role in engaging with ESG matters, and we are committed to ensuring adherence to the highest standards of ESG policy. My gosh. And the last one, though, is labeled as potentially skeptical. Oakworth Bank. Oakworth Bank, I'm familiar with Oakworth. Oakworth Bank is based in Birmingham. They're not a big name bank, but they are considered to be somewhat skeptical because they have issued statements that seem to indicate that they are not all for this ESG thing. And so that's your banks, three major banks located right here in Alabama. All right, listen, that's a whole batch of home fries. Coming up next, at the top of the hour, we're going to take the break, and then we'll come right back to the Grand Council with Jeff Poor and Dale Jackson. We got all kinds of stuff to talk about. I told him yesterday as we were lining up the time, I said, boys, it's a target-rich environment. So, yeah, y'all stay tuned for that. We'll have the Grand Council with Dale Jackson from WVNN in Huntsville and Jeff Poor from FM Talk 106.5 down in Mobile and little old me. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.